So this is the bit before the theme music, but I just want you to imagine if you got here late. Imagine if you got here late and you didn't get the bit before the theme music, you just got the theme music. How would you feel? Well, you don't have to worry, do you? Because you got here on time, this is the bit before the theme music. And now it's the theme music. Run the theme music!
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you!
What's this? What's this?
Well, just seeing a trusty old Red Rider Carbine Action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. I hope you're feeling festive. I am. So, I don't think I've got much to report since the last podcast. So, the only housekeeping I've got to do is the hoovering. So, I'm going to quickly do the hoovering, and you can listen to the podcast. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, my wife probably does the hoovering, and it's not true. I do the hoovering. I'm whipped. Yeah, she runs the show, and I'm terrified of her. Anyway, sorry, I've got to get back to work.
This is the Total Christmas Podcast. Listen up, Jackass.
Boys and girls, the last episode was Valentine's Day, and I'm sorry to say, this segment isn't Christmas related, it's Valentine's Day related. And I know a lot of you are going to be going, what? Well, this isn't Christmas, I'm turning it off. Nope, you've lost a subscriber. And I'd prefer it if you didn't unsubscribe just because of this little segment. But I got an email from Kevin Church, and I thought I'd share it with you based on what I was talking about last week. Do you remember I told you the story about I was doing the balloon animals in town for free for the kids, and we got escorted out of the mall, me and my daughters did, by the security guard. That inspired Kevin to send me this. So have a listen to this, and I'm going to give you my take on it. Kevin's put, it's probably no surprise, but I'm that guy at the office who says hi to everyone. I'm in a 15th floor shared space in downtown Toronto with other teams in the organisation. Now there's a shy, nerdy type director down the hall who leads a totally different branch. Over the last several months, we'd crossed paths, especially in the kitchen, where she's frequently heating up her coffee in the microwave. We'd exchange good mornings, hellos, and a bit of small talk. Well, Valentine's Day rolls around and I have the brilliant idea to give her one of those small electric desktop mug warmers. So I wrap it in ribbon. Do you get that? Do you get that? Because she's normally heating her coffee in the microwave. He's got her a little desktop warmer. Nice thought, Kevin. So I wrap it in red paper, add a little paper heart that says Happy Valentine's Day, and with a bit of stealth and help from her staff, I sneak into her office. No card, no name, just a harmless, anonymous gift. I figured she probably knows it was me, and maybe she'll say thanks at some point. No expectations, no strings. Cue record scratch. My director calls me in yesterday and tells me that the woman did not appreciate it, not at all. She felt uncomfortable and returned the gift. I'm told it was well-intentioned, but don't do that again. So now I have this unopened mug warmer sitting on my desk. Meanwhile, her staff and my friends thought it was adorable and genuinely thoughtful. So here's the question, Jack. Is it petty if I leave the mug warmer out in plain sight so everyone, including the unappreciated director, can see it? I look forward to your ruling from the High Court of the Total Christmas Podcast. Do you know what? Here's the deal. She's clearly a little bit socially awkward. I say try and keep her happy. I don't know what her deal is. I don't know what her story is. But if you leave it out on your desk, it's not a big deal, is it? It's just as long as you're using it. You don't want it to go to waste. You don't want to chuck it in a bin. But at the same time, I don't think you want to be trying to upset anyone either. So is there no one else you fancy in the office? Give it to them as a belated Valentine's gift? I don't know. I wish I could give you a better answer, but my general thoughts on this one is, if she's a bit shy and socially awkward, probably best just to be nice to her. Yeah, although you were nice to her, and how did she repay you? What a bitch. Do you know what, actually? Go in her office and shove it down. No, don't do that. I've been no help whatsoever. Can we just move on? If you've got any dilemmas that you'd like dealt with badly by me, send them in. See what happens. Now let's do this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
We recognize at the Tiki Bar that alcohol does not have many vitamins. This is the reason why we know to drink lots of it. I was reading an interesting article about how in Iceland they read books for the holidays, and in Australia they go to the beach. But in Britain, they celebrate by betting on which song will be the most popular before Christmas Day. Of course, the writer is talking about the Christmas number one, which is announced on the Friday before Christmas and reflects the most popular song of the holiday chart week, based on sales and streaming. Now, the tone of this piece was sarcastic, describing how the country comes together not to celebrate faith, family, or hope for humanity, but instead for truly tasteless music. In fact, the writer said it is one of the few things that unites England as a nation. Now, this was a funny take on the tradition, and I did appreciate the attitude, but where it really caught my "do you hear what I hear" attention and sent my inner voice howling was the use of the same descriptor for those tunes. When citing songs by Mr. Blobby, Glad Baby, and Bob the Builder, the writer referred to them as dross. Not gross, but dross. Dross is a term that does not come up in American conversation. Given the songs that he named, it was easy for me to determine its meaning. But what exactly is dross? The word itself traces back to Old English dross, meaning dregs. Dross has been part of the English lexicon since Anglo-Saxon times, and it has historical and contextual significance. At its core, dross refers to the unwanted material or scum that forms on the surface of molten metal during metallurgy. So when a blacksmith would heat iron until it melted, the dross was seen bubbling up. It was the dregs from the metals in smelting. Dross evolved from meaning a physical debris in the mid-15th century to a much broader use to signify anything considered trivial or inferior. It became a powerful metaphor for something perceived as low quality or low value when compared against more enriching options. For example, during the 19th century, it was used in literature and poetry to describe the modern times as mediocre and filled with dross, as opposed to the golden days of the past. So the original meaning of dross was the scum formed on the surface of molten metal. However, today it is more often used to refer to anything worthless. I suppose some of the bad number ones are dross, but they're kind of like your relatives at Christmas dinner. Embarrassing, loud, but somehow essential for the whole experience. They just kind of make you shake your head and laugh. Cheers and happy Christmas.
That's amazing. I use the term dross frequently, but I never knew where it came from. And now I do. And the next time I hear someone say it, I'll tell them where it came from and I'll look really cool. Great work, Bob. He's going to be back in a bit, but right now we're doing this.
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle. Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
Boys and girls, this episode's version of A Christmas Carol is possibly the longest version I've ever done. I'm pretty sure it is. It's 2 hours and 7 minutes long, and it's called Estella Scrooge, A Christmas Carol with a Twist. And originally, I thought it was some version where they've said it in modern day, and instead of it being a man, it's a woman. But no, there's more to it than that. This is the blurb that comes up at the start of the film. During these best and worst of times, a company of film and theatre artists have come together to bring a new Christmas entertainment to life. A Stiller Scrooge was rehearsed and filmed in an unprecedented way. One day at a time, one scene at a time, one actor at a time. Under strict COVID restrictions and with the kindly participation of the spirit of Charles Dickens. So yeah, this was filmed one actor at a time and then they're all superimposed next to each other. I'm guessing they used green screen, judging by the backgrounds, but it's fairly well done. They were clearly on a budget, but it's a very interesting one and I think it's worth me giving it my time. Now this, like I said, is 2 hours and 7 minutes long, so I'm going to miss out bits of it. I'm not going to go too in depth, but what I'm going to do is lead you through the story. So one thing I'm not going to do is mention any of the actors, and the reason for that is I've never heard of any of them. I didn't recognise a single one. I thought I did. I thought I recognised one of them. Turns out I looked him up. It wasn't who I thought it was. So I didn't know any of the actors. I'm not going to go into that. I'm just going to go into the story. Now, the first bit is we get this song. I will play a little bit of this song. I'm not going to focus on the songs, but this one I'll give you a little bit of. Have a listen.
Bleak house, hold, please. Adjustable mortgages, loans guaranteed with safe guidelines. Speculation, borrowing, subprime incentives.
And we find out that Estella Scrooge is the CEO of Bleak House, which is some sort of big, massive financial company that does healthcare, does mortgages, does other types of it does all sorts. I don't know. Anyway, she's on the phone to some guy, and at the very start, we're getting the idea they're name dropping a lot of Dickens characters, not just from A Christmas Carol. In fact, hardly any from A Christmas Carol, as it happens. And she's on the phone to some guy, she's calling him Copperfield, and then just before she hangs up, she goes, "Oh, David, I think I've got to go," and hangs, "Oh, I get it, David Copperfield. See what you did there." Then in comes Betty Cratchit, yeah, because Scrooge is a lady, so's Bob Cratchit, she's a lady. And she's got messages that she's taken from other clients, people called Little Dorrit. Well, not Little Dorrit, Dorrit. She refers to someone as Dorrit, but that's from Little Dorrit. Mr. Peary Bingham, I think she said, and I'm not sure what Peary Bingham is from. There's a lot of names in this that I don't know what Dickens' story they're from. But at the same time, I'm pretty sure they did lift them directly from Dickens books. A few I looked up, a few I didn't bother. Oh, and the final person she's on the phone to is a Mr. Twist. Have a listen to this.
Oh, and a Mr. Twist phone.
Twist? Oh, God, no. Never happy. Just always wanting more.
Do you get it? Oliver Twist? Yeah, you, of course you get it. And at this point, we find out that Betty's got a daughter whose name's Tammy. Tiny Tammy, she refers to her as. Although she's not that tiny, to be honest. She refers to Tiny Tammy as being very sick, and her illness isn't covered by the health plan that the company provides. And it sounds like no one's illness is covered by the health plan that the company provides. Then she starts talking about another guy who's a member of the board called Mr. Heap, Uriah Heap, yeah, from, I don't know, some... I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to look him up. I don't know much about the other Dickens books. I've listened to the audiobook of Oliver Twist and I've read A Christmas Carol about 20 times, but that's it. I don't know anything about the other Dickens, but I know very little about the other Dickens books, very little. I know a little. Let's not go into that. And then, for some reason, it's mentioned the town of Pickwick. And I guess that's from the Pickwick Papers, obviously. And they mention a few other names of places that I don't know, but I'm guessing. I'm going to have to stop saying. Imagine every place name or every person in this is from a Dickens novel. I will mention a few others. I'm going to try to stop doing it. But she wants to go back to Pickwick because that's where she was born and raised. And there's a building there or hotel or something. And she's going to foreclose on it. She wants to go there herself on Christmas Eve, no less. So she flies down there on Christmas Eve, and then up on the wall of her office there's like all the previous owners of the business, and they were all previously called Scrooge. And she sings some song about doing everything that she was taught by the older bosses from the old days. There's a lot of songs, boys and girls, and I'm not going to play much of any of them because they're quite forgettable, to be honest, but I will mention when a song comes in. So then we cut to this place that's going to be shut down, and it's called Hart House, and the staff are all there talking about the weather, and then two girls, twins, which is interesting because they're not actually twins. It's the same actress playing her own twin, but because it's the way they filmed it, it's quite easy for them to do that. They come in and start decorating a tree and singing about it. Then we find out that the guy that runs the place is called Nickleby. And I'm thinking, oh, Nicholas Nickleby. No, it's actually Philip Nickleby. And that's because they call him Pip. And Pip is from, I want to say Great Expectations, but I could be wrong. Anyway, he starts dishing out the post. And he's dishing out the post. There's like about 10 of them all sat around, like staff and people staying at the hotel. As I say, it's a hotel. It's more like some sort of hostel type place. And it's just pretty much a list of Dickens characters' names he's dishing the post to. And we get another song. Can't remember what that one was about. So they're all happy because it's Christmas. And then a chap called Mr. Jaggers turns up. I'm guessing that's a Dickens name. I don't think it's named after Mick Jagger. Anyway, he turns up and he's got some bad news. Turns out the mortgage on the place, we already know this, the mortgage on the place has been bought out by Bleak House. And while they're sat around talking, there's a lady in the background making cups of tea. And she's pouring this kettle, but she's just not got a kettle in her hand. She's pouring up again. What, were they going to superimpose the kettle into her hand after they did it? What? I don't get it. Why didn't she just have a prop of a kettle or a teapot? That was very strange. Anyway, then the lady goes around and starts dishing out the tea, and there's nothing in there. And someone says, there's nothing in there. And he says, no, there never is. Because this lady's a little bit mental, and she's just imagining like a little child's tea party where they're pretending to pour out the tea. So, yeah, there's me thinking that there was an error in the filming. No, they knew what they were doing. This lady's mad. Then, just before Mr. Jaggers leaves after giving him the bad news, one of the characters, who's called Dawkins, goes, oh, Mr. Jaggers, don't forget your wallet, because she's nicked it off him. And listen to this.
Wasn't funny, Dawkins.
No, but it was artful, wasn't it?
Yeah, you see, Jack Dawkins was the artful dodger. So, very artful. Oh, you get it. That's from Oliver Twist. So they're all sat round miserable now, thinking they're going to lose the place, and we get another song. But this is when Scrooge turns up. And Kelsa Preece, Nickleby, the main dude that runs the hostel, recognises Scrooge. And it's like, oh, I get it. They're exes. Yeah, of course it. I knew that. Do you know, I knew that from the get-go when she said she was going back to her hometown. Anyway, let's not worry about that too much. She tells them she's going to foreclose. And Molly, the lady that was pouring out the tea, brings her a cupcake. And this time it's just an empty plate. And she's like, oh, no, I'm full up at the moment. Thanks anyway. Yeah. And obviously Nick will be saying, look, come on, don't foreclose on us. We can sort something out. You know, where will all the people that work here go? And she says this.
Are there no prisons? Are there no workhouses? Just kidding.
Yeah, which I thought was quite interesting. And then we get another song about how mean she is. And Scrooge leaves and they're all sat round miserable. And then Scrooge comes back. Because there's a massive blizzard outside. Do you remember I said they were talking about the weather? Well, yeah, she's snowed in and she can't fly. And then Dawkins has a song where she's sort of thanking Scrooge, but in a, obviously, sarcastic way. There's lots of songs, lots of songs. And then Nickleby's like, well, you're going to have to stay here. She's like, well, I could stay in one of the other hotels. He's like, no, Bleak House has already bought those out and closed them down. So you're going to have to stay here. You can stay in the honeymoon suite. And everyone's like, oh, it's a bit creepy there. And we get our one and only Bah Humbug. Yeah, Scrooge says that. I could play it for you. Not gonna. You're gonna still imagine it, aren't you? Then we get this line out of nowhere. Have a listen to this.
Do you have a podcast?
No.
Right? Who has the time?
And I'm thinking, yeah, I kind of agree with you, to be honest. The amount of effort I put into this podcast for my three listeners, yeah. Anyway, where was I? Oh, then she's in her room. And at this point, we're at the 45-minute mark. And we haven't had a single ghost turn up. 45 minutes out of 2 hours and 7 minutes. So we're a third of the way through. Yeah. Anyway, she's in a room and we get Marla Havisham. And she's sort of in a wedding dress type thing. And we find out that she was abandoned at the altar. Just like Miss Havisham from, I think, Great Expectations, but I could be wrong. And what she says is sort of similar enough to the whole Jacob Marley thing. It's a bit different because it's modern day, but it's similar enough. And then she gets a song, of course. Then we cut to Nickleby downstairs and he's talking to the staff, the other staff members, about a councilman that he knows who may be able to help so he could write a letter to him. And we get another song. And I've got to say, at this point, they're really dragging it out. I mean, we've just had Jacob Marley. Then we cut to another song about how they're going to try and save this hostel, hotel type place. So then we cut back to Scrooge in her bedroom, and she's sat on a bed, and the whole room starts to transform into like a stage, a rock stage, and the Ghost of Christmas Past turns up, and she's a character called Sissy Jupe. I did look her up. She is from a Dickens novel. I've forgotten which one. And she's like a rocker, all dressed in leathers and that, and she sings her song. I forget what it was about, probably about being the ghost, I don't know. And then we go back in time to when she first met Pip, and it turns out she was adopted by a lady who she thought was her auntie, and may well have been, I forget. And her auntie, that's Marla Havisham, the one we met before, she's really rich, and Pip, his dad, is like the handyman, I think, or the gardener or something, who works for them. And so they meet when he's at work with his dad, and they have a brief chat. It's a very short scene, really, and it means nothing, their meeting, but, you know, that's their first meeting. Then it cuts to, like, the year later, and she's having dinner with Pip and his family. And I could be wrong, but it looked like the chap that played Jaggers was the chap playing Pip Nickleby's dad. I could be wrong. I didn't not spend too long looking at it, but it looked like him. Anyway, so that's nice. That's the best Christmas she ever had, and they're all having Christmas dinner together. Then we get the next year, and we've got Marla and Pip and Scrooge, and it's an interesting bit because she's talking to Pip Nickleby, and this is Marla Havisham. She's singing to him about how you must treat her wonderfully and be good to her and love her, and then she's talking to Estella, the young Estella Scrooge, saying you've got to crush him and treat him mean and take control of him. So that's really nice, lovely song where she's being a right old bitch. Then we get the next year, and Pip Nickleby has got a present for Scrooge, and he gives it to her, and she opens it. It's a book, clearly a book. She opens it up. Guess what book it is? Yeah, Grimm's Fairy Tales. I'll tell you what, they really caught me out of left field with that one. I was not expecting that. I was sure it was going to be a Dickens novel. Nope, it was Grimm's Fairy Tales. No idea why they chose to do that. Don't know if they're being clever, or I don't know. The rest of it, you can tell they think they're being clever just by name dropping every Dickens character that ever existed. And she's a really cold bitch about it, actually. And he's got to go. She says, okay, before you go, you may kiss my hand. And he's like, yeah, no, you're all right. And she goes, oh, and take your book back. I'm not going to read it. And gives him the book back. Oh, then she goes back indoors, and Marla's there, and she's going, you did well. Yes, you treated him like crap, and now he'll do whatever you want him to do. And that's the end of the scene with the Ghost of Christmas Past. And I don't like it when they do this. In a Christmas Carol, I think the whole ghosts bit should be ghost, ghost, ghost. But in this bit, we cut to Nickleby, and he's talking to Smike, who's like the receptionist guy. They're chatting, and then Smike gets a song. I can't remember what it's about trying to save the hotel, obviously, or wishing they could save it, I don't know. And Scrooge turns up. So Scrooge, after ghost number one, has gone downstairs just to see what's going on. And it told us the ghosts were going to come on the hour. So I guess the 5 minutes she spent with the Ghost of Christmas Past actually was 5 minutes in real time. They're not trying to drag that out. That's all she got with the Ghost of Christmas Past. So she's got time to go downstairs anyway. And Nickleby offers her a drink, an alcoholic drink, I might add, because earlier he's already said that this place, they don't have any alcoholic drinks because it's for people that are down and out and might have urges. So yeah, there's no alcohol. He's got them, double standards, if you ask me. They have a drink, and then she leaves, and we get another song. This is Nickleby singing it. He's singing about Essie, he calls her, Estella Scrooge. Then we get the Ghost of Christmas Present turns up, and this is a big number, and it's got like backing dancers, and there's loads of lovely decorations all around him. This is in Scrooge's room, you know, she's gone back upstairs. There's like a nutcracker, an elf, an angel, and a fairy. They're all dancing with him, and he's dressed like Scrooge. He's wearing like the stocking cap, the dressing gown, and the nightshirt, just like Scrooge in the book. And that makes sense, actually, because he is Scrooge. Yeah, and it turns out that Scrooge is her great-great-great-great-grandfather. So there's that. She says she's never even heard of him. Interesting. They fly off through the air to go and see Betty Cratchit, and they're all sat round talking about how ill Tammy is, and that's really sad. But we find out that Betty has set a place at their Christmas table for Scrooge. Pointless, because she's already said she's not going to come round, but she's done it anyway. And then we get another song about something. Then they go outside, and Scrooge opens his dressing gown, and we've got Ignorance and Want. Have we got Ignorance and Want? Have a listen.
The boy is ignorance, the girl is hunger.
Yeah, he calls them ignorance and hunger. And ignorance and hunger are the two little kids that played the young Nickleby and the young Scrooge. And she says this,
Where are they?
Where are they? They're there. They're in front of you. They're like 2 metres in front of you. There they are. You're looking at them. Why are you asking what? Yeah. Anyway, that's the end of that bit. That's the end of the scene with Ebenezer Scrooge or the Ghost of Christmas Present. Call him what you will. And she turns up this time, not in her bedroom, but in the same room where Pip is there writing letters, trying to save the hotel or the hostel. And she sees the book on the side there. And she says, oh, that's the Grimm Fairy Tales book you gave me, isn't it? And he's like, yeah, how do you remember that? And she's like, oh, I'd never forget it, or some crap, even though she didn't want the blooming book. And then he starts talking about how much he loved her and how much she'll always be a part of him. And it's like, look, she treated you like crap, mate. You want to get over that one. Let me get another song, probably. And then she goes back upstairs and we get the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. Now, the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, he says, I'm going to take you to three graves. Because that's the only bit we get is like in this graveyard, although I think this might be three separate graveyards. And the first graveyard is his grave. And it turns out his name is Melchizedek Myrdal. I hope I said that right. And apparently he got done for fraud and was sent to prison, so he killed himself. Okay, what's that got to do with her? And what's that got to do with Christmas? Forget it. You're going to have to. Then they go to Tammy's grave, and obviously Tiny Tammy's passed away, and Betty and Bob are there crying. Bob and Betty leave, and then we get this song where Tammy is singing about what she could have done if she'd lived, which I guess is meant to make Scrooge feel guilty. And then we get to Scrooge's grave, and it turns out that she got ill, so the board of Bleak House sacked her, and they took away all her benefits from some loophole or something, and she ended up dying penniless. And she's like, oh no, this ain't good. And the only people at her grave are Nickleby, Pip Nickleby, Smike, his receptionist, and Dawkins, who's one of the other people that works at the hotel, and they're all at her grave. Why are they there? So we're the only people, like Smike and or Dawkins, obviously wouldn't want anything to do with her. I can sort of understand Nickleby if he still was holding a candle for her after all this. That's pointless. Anyway, then we get a song from like the goons that were there, like the backing group for the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, and that's a bit nothing as well. And then Scrooge wakes up back in her room and she says this.
I'm alive. I feel light as a feather.
Yeah, I quite like that, you know, come from the book. Obviously, there's no bit where she looks out in the street and shouts, Walker. Then we cut to downstairs, and the gang, all the people that work at the hostel, hotel, opening their presents. And the bellhop, he's an old guy called Deadlock, he gives a present to Dawkins, and it's an old Brooklyn's Dodger hat that he's had since 1957. And she says this.
Why me, Deadlock?
Because everyone here, you're the only one who could really be a Dodger.
At last, somebody gets me.
And I didn't mind that, because she's the Artful Dodger, isn't she, Jack Dawkins? So there's that as well, I suppose. So then Scrooge turns up, and I don't know if she's come in from outside or from downstairs. I think she's come from outside. And she whistles and the twins come in, bringing a load of presents. Now, the twins were just sat there a second ago while everyone was opening their presents around the, I don't know. Anyway, then Betty, Bob and Tammy turn up because they've been flown there in a private jet, and we get a song, and I can't remember what that song was about. And then Jaggers turns up. Now, here we go, boys and girls, because I'm about to blow your mind. I'm not going to blow your mind at all. Do you remember Jaggers? He's a good guy, but he's the one that gave them the bad news that Bleak House was going to foreclose on their mortgage. He turns up and, oh, I forgot to mention this. At the start, this old boy turns up looking for a room and he hasn't got any money. He's like a war vet. I've written it down in my notes. I don't know, I skipped that line. Don't know what happened there. He needs a room and they sort of explain to him what goes on in this hostel and how he says he's got no money and said, that's okay. We kind of turn a blind eye to people that don't have any money. That's fine. You can come on in. So that's wonderful. The major, that's what this is, calling the major. He's staying there. Well, sorry I missed that bit. It's very important because, oh, and I also forgot. Oh my goodness me. I forgot the fact that the way they could buy Hart House in the first place was because they had a mystery benefactor. Yeah, there's that as well. God, I've done a hash job of this, haven't I? So anyway, Jaggers turns up with the mystery benefactor. The mystery benefactor is the Major, but he's not Major Bagstock, which was his name. He's actually called Magwitch. Again, Great Expectations. It turns out he embezzled a load of money because he used to work for Bleak House. He embezzled a load of money from Bleak House. And do you know what? Actually, I can't do it. I can't do this. I'm going to have to just play the whole clip. It's quite a long clip, kids. Have a listen. Listen very carefully and it'll all make sense. And I'll meet you at the end of this, okay? This is the... Just have a listen.
I've been summoned here by your benefactor.
My benefactor? Major Bagstock?
It's true, Nickleby. I am your benefactor. But my name isn't Bagstock. It's Magwitch. Ralph Magwitch. And I'm not a major, never fought in a war. In fact, I've spent the last 15 years in jail for embezzlement.
15 years?
Released yesterday, mercifully, on Christmas Eve.
Why did you conceal your identity?
To watch you, Nickleby. To see what you've done with the funds I gave you. And on that score, I have to say you've made me very proud.
Well, thank you, but if I may ask, who did you embezzle from?
The company I once worked for. Bleak House.
Go on.
I was in love with a girl. She loved me, too, but in the end, it was not to be.
I'm not following this. Is anyone following this?
Shh. What was the name of the girl?
Mary.
Lovely name. Lovely.
We had a child together.
Wonderful.
Out of wedlock.
Oh, dear.
And then I was sent to prison and never saw her grow up.
That's so sad.
What happened to Mary?
She fell apart completely. My actions destroyed our family forever. She gave our child over to her brother, and no one ever saw my Mary again.
Okay, that's great. Anyone need towels?
Who was the brother?
Jacob Scrooge. Of course, Jacob had no interest in keeping the child, so he pawned her off to a distant relative who worked for Bleak House in Ohio. A woman abandoned at the altar, childless and lonely, who would never reveal the truth of the child's identity, not even to the child.
Who was this distant relative?
Marla Havisham.
That's right. Estella.
So I'm the daughter.
Yes.
And you're my father?
Not much of a father, I'm afraid.
And my mother?
Was Mary Scrooge.
What happened to her? Does anybody know?
That's where you came in, Nickleby.
Me?
Tell them, Jaggers.
Mary turned up in Pickwick many years later, forlorn and destitute, asking to see you, her beloved child.
But Marla refused to let her see you.
So Mary stayed on in Pickwick, keeping a distant watch over you, Miss Scrooge.
And Jaggers kept an eye on her, didn't you, Jaggers? And with a little fine footwork, I managed to get some money through to you, Nickleby, to fund the Hart House and keep her safe from harm.
So my mother came here?
She did indeed.
And you looked after her, Nickleby?
I guess I must have. Smike, do we ever have anyone at the Hart House named Mary?
Sure did, Philip. Mary Partigle and her husband Neville.
Her name wasn't Mary Partigle. It wasn't Mary at all.
She called herself by my pet name for it. Molly.
Our Molly?
Mary Scrooge.
My mother is the Mad Cupcake Woman.
Molly, my dear, this is your daughter, Estella.
Cupcakes for me. Thank you, Molly.
You're welcome, Estella.
Did you get it? Did you get what happened there? Does that all make sense to you? I hope it does. Then Molly can finally talk, and that's nice. Then Pip starts singing, and then they all join in. And as they're singing the song, Scrooge has this line. Have a listen to this.
I'll give up the Bentley, I'll give up the glam, 'cause at last I know who in
the dickens I am.
And after she says who the dickens are, she winks at the camera. Ain't that great? No, it's not great. Then they're all sitting around for dinner. Scrooge gives a speech about how she's going to change the name of Bleak House to Hart House. And she's found out that Uriah Heep, who we mentioned earlier, has been nicking funds. So he gets sacked. And Betty Cratchit is made chairman of the company. And all of Tiny Tammy's healthcare is going to be paid for. And she says this.
God bless us, everyone.
And then we get the last song, which is called Far, Far Better Thing I Do. And that is taken from A Tale of Two Cities. And that's pretty much it, boys and girls, really. I know that was a long one. And there's a reason it was a long one, because it was 2 hours and 7 minutes. The reason it's so long is partly the songs. And a lot of the songs are like similar versions of the same song that they've called back to from early on in the film. There's a lot of time spent over the fact that Hart House is going to be repossessed. We know that pretty much right from the start. Why keep banging on and banging on and banging on about it? You could have cut that bit. We could have lost 20 minutes of the film and you wouldn't have noticed. But here's the thing. As versions of A Christmas Carol go, this isn't great. But they were trying to do something, and I'll give that to them. They were trying to do something, and this was during lockdown, which would have been very, very tricky. There's clearly a lot of work's gone into it, and I've got to say, the singing is really good. I know a lot of the actors were theatre actors. The acting's not bad. It is what it is. If you want to go and watch it, it's long, and it's not great, but you've got to appreciate what they were trying to do. I'm going to give them that. I should have made a note of all the Dickens references they made, but some of them probably would have gone past me anyway. Anyway, if you want to check it out, it's on Amazon Prime. It's free to watch. I don't know if it's anywhere else. It might be on YouTube. I don't know. I didn't bother looking elsewhere. It's called Estella Scrooge, A Christmas Carol with a Twist, and it could be worse. Now let's do this.
Where are you, Christmas?
Where are you, Christmas? How about Melbourne, Australia? What is unique in the Southern Hemisphere is that December is summer, so Christmas in Melbourne is warm or even hot. This doesn't stop the holiday season, as the city has a month-long Christmas festival. Santa's Magical Kingdom is its annual Christmas event, usually held at the Caulfield Racecourse, featuring a festive walk-through wonderland. It includes a circus spectacular, Snowland, amusement rides, gingerbread decorating, and visits with Santa. Plus, there is the Crown Christmas River Show with water fountains, laser lights, and projections, the iconic Meyer Christmas windows, and you may even see Santa and a crew of stand-up paddleboarders making their way down the Yarra River. So that's in December. However, Melbourne in July is also a festive place to be. Christmas in July is a common winter promotion for many restaurants, pubs, and venues, which host mid-year Christmas-themed events. The Sovereign Hill Museum transforms into a winter wonderland experience throughout July. Its buildings are lit up and fake snow falls around as you walk through the town. There is a brass band playing Christmas classics, a light tunnel, and an off-season visit from St. Nick. And finally, the city has a number of year-round specialty stores selling Christmas decorations. There is ambiance in the Queen Victoria Market, offering a unique selection of gifts, including Venetian masks, unusual jewelry, blingy decorations, and rare ornaments sourced from around the world. They also have a white-themed room with snow-capped trees, glowing lights, and icicle baubles. In the Christmas Elf stores, they offer a massive range of decorations. The Christmas spirit is alive year-round at these stores that cater to collectors and regular Christmas lovers alike. There are two locations in Victoria, Australia. One is in Ferntree Gully, and the other, the 11,840 square foot store, is in Preston, in Melbourne's northern suburbs. Now, if you know of another hot holiday location with cool places to party, you give a shout to Jack, He'll spread it down to me, and we'll tell you where to find Christmas throughout the year.
Boys and girls, I've been to Australia. I've been there 3 times, spent Christmas there 2x, and you know what? Never been to Melbourne. Never been. Shame on me. Makes me want to go again. Good work, Bob. Excellent work, in fact. If you're not listening to Bob's podcast, I've got to mention it. It wouldn't be fair if I didn't. It's Festive Foreign Film Fans, and him and his mate Mark talk about Christmas films from other countries. I've told you this a number of times. I shouldn't have to tell you again. Good work, Bob. Now let's do this. So, boys and girls, I received this back in November, don't you know, and I forgot all about it. And then I was meant to read it out in the last episode, and I forgot all about it again. This comes from my best friend, self-appointed, Chris Kavanagh, and it's how he found out about Santa Claus. And he's titled it, and I'm going to read it as he's written it. It's quite dramatic. It's called Santa's Box Truth. I was 7 and in 2nd grade, while my friend was 6 and in 1st grade, when we discovered the perfect hideout. A giant refrigerator box in my living room, slated for the trash heap. It became our temporary fortress and clubhouse. Crawling inside, we shut out the world and shared our excitement for Christmas. Oh, I'm so excited for Santa to come, I announced, grinning, already picturing the Christmas morning magic. My friend froze, and then tilted his head with a smug smirk only a 1st grader could pull off. You don't still believe in Santa, do you? It wasn't a question, it was a revelation. I felt the corrugated walls closing in as my childhood reality crumbled. I wanted to argue, but I shrugged, tried to play it cool and forced a shaky smile. Yeah, of course not, I lied, protecting my bruised heart. He then added a 2nd dagger. It's your parents. The enchantment of Santa, the jolly figure who snuck down chimneys and rewarded good kids, disappeared instantly. People experience life-changing truths in grand moments, vision quests, mountaintop epiphanies with a bearded guru, or emerging triumphantly from a sweat lodge. My rite of passage happened inside a cardboard box with the scent of styrofoam and the frigid air factory lingering in the now stifled air. When I climbed out, Santa stayed behind, packed up and ready for his journey to the landfill. That was the day I learned that some aspects of childhood can vanish instantly, while the rest slowly fade, leaving you holding on to the memories, which in this case were wrapped in cardboard. Told you it was dramatic, kids. Thanks so much for that, Chris. Good story. And what makes it the saddest thing of all is that you're 7 in 2nd grade, your mate's a year younger than you, and he's in 1st grade, and he knew and you didn't. You made a fool of yourself, Chris, but I still love you. Now let's do this. This is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz. Okay, boys and girls, it's the quiz, and I've got some good news and I've got some bad news. The good news is, I was sent in more scores than ever before. 24, would you believe? 24 people. That's more than I was getting sent in the build-up to Christmas, when the listening figures actually go up. 24 people sent their scores, right? This is the bad news. 12 of them beat me. Yeah, 50% of the people that sent in their scores beat me. Can you believe that? I'm furious about it. I'm furious. And I can guess there's 2 reasons why the scores were so high. 1, clearly the questions were too easy. But 2, I don't know if you remember, but all the questions were about Christmas drinks. Yeah, so all I can assume is that my listeners are all a bunch of alcoholics scoring more than me in the quiz. I'm not happy, boys and girls. You know how I feel about people beating me in the quiz. Right, I'm going to read out your scores. The lowest score was 6 points. And with 6 points, we have Kira G, Caroline Cole. She's put Team Cole, so I'm guessing she wasn't working alone there. Benji Pearson, Todd Pulte, and Mark Westcott. With 7 points, we've got the lovely Nettie Tabeau, Scott Newman, Jamie Robertson, Martin Goodman, Frank Talley, and Chris Kavanagh. You remember Chris Kavanagh? Yeah, he just sent me the story about Santa. And also Kevin Church, who's the one who sent us the story about the mug warmer. So those all got the same points as me, beating me, which I'm not happy about, with 8 points. David Ferguson, Adam Parker from Merry Britsmas podcast, Pamela Wootton, John Gomez, CPP. That's what it says in his email address, but his name's Sean. I don't know his surname. It's just got CPP and then Sean. Brian McGloin, Barbara Wright, Jack Umberferth, Guy Sawyer, and Mary Pulte. With 9 points, 2 more than me, is Mark Westfall from the Advent Calendar podcast. And with 10 points, boys and girls, 10 points, well done, Jennifer Kay Fantastic work, madam. Those are the scores. I'm not happy about it. I'm hoping you do a lot worse this week. Now, I don't know if I've ever mentioned this before. My book is called the So This Is Christmas Quiz Book. And here's the deal. You get 15 questions per quiz. And then they're in blocks of three quizzes that are all the same subject. So the first quiz of 15 questions is fairly easy. Second one, a bit trickier. Third one, quite hard. Last episode, all the questions were about Christmas drinks. This episode, again, they're all about Christmas drinks. But now we're on to the hard questions. Now, I go through them and I pick some of the ones I kick out that I don't think anyone will get. Other ones I'll kick out that are too easy. Other ones I'll kick out because they might be British-centric. So I never get to use the whole 15 questions, just so you know. Anyway, here come your 10 questions. Question number one. What drink was advertised at Christmas with a tree made of 140 empty barrels? That's not actually on the tricky one. That's the medium ones. This is the, now we're getting them from the tricky end. Next one. What bowl is wassail traditionally served in? What bowl? Okay, next one. Which spirit is used in a hot toddy? Now, I'm going to give you a bit of a clue here. Okay, I can tell you it's not the spirit of Christmas past. It's also not the spirit of Christmas present or Christmas yet to come. Okay, I shouldn't be giving you clues, but I'm giving you that clue. Okay, because I just want to help you a little bit. Right, next one. What two types of drink are often mulled? What are those two types? Okay, next question. In Sweden, what do you commonly place in the bottom of your glass before adding Glögg? Now, I'm going to tell you, boys and girls. I thought, hang on, well, it's either this or it's this. Which one is it? Well, it's both of those. So it's two things that you might find at the bottom of your glass of Glögg. Okay, two things. I'm going to give you half a point. I don't normally do this. I'm going to give you half a point if you get one of them. Right, next one. In A Christmas Carol, what drink does Scrooge want to share with Bob Cratchit at the end of the book? Remember that one? That's quite an easy one if you're as clever as me. Okay, next one. What American cocktail is most similar to Buck's Fizz? Now, here's the deal. In the UK, it is traditional to have Buck's Fizz as a tipple first thing in the morning on Christmas Day. Now, I'm not going to tell you what's in it. I'm not going to. That'd make it too easy for you to figure out like what the American version of it is. But I will say this. If you don't know the answer, I have mentioned it at least twice in previous episodes. So why not go back and listen to all the other episodes until you find those two bits and you'll be fine. Okay, next one. What book published in 1937 popularised hot buttered rum? What's the name of that book? And, oh, we're up to number nine already. That was quick. Okay. Do you remember last episode I was talking about Bailey's Irish Cream? Yeah, well, this is about Bailey's Irish Cream. Which of the following has not, I say not, been released as a variant of Bailey's original Irish Cream? Is it apple pie flavoured, red velvet cupcake flavoured, pumpkin spice flavoured, or rum and raisin flavoured? Which one of those four have they not released? And the last one. Which beer once had a Christmas advert that featured Santa's reindeers drinking it? Now, I remember the advert, so I'll tell you what happens. The reindeer are looking a bit sorry for themselves, so then they drink some of this beer, and I think one of their noses glows, maybe, I don't know, and then they can fly again. Something like that. That's something about like what happens. Anyway, those are your 10 questions. Are you ready for your 10 answers? Question number one, what drink was advertised at Christmas with a tree made of 140 empty barrels? Well, I didn't know this. It was Jack Daniels. I didn't have a clue. Okay, next one. What bowl is wassail traditionally served in? Now, this is awful. Because the answer is a wassail bowl. That's ridiculous, isn't it? I thought a wooden bowl. I thought it was made of wood. So I looked it up, and traditionally it does appear that wassail bowls were made of wood. So if you put wassail bowl, which is ridiculous, you can have your point. If you put wood, I'm going to give you a point. Other than that, you blew it. Right, next one. Which spirit is in a hot toddy? Now, I told you that it's not the ghost of Christmas present, past, or yet to come. Well, the answer was the spirit used in a hot toddy is Jacob Marley. Okay, the next... I'm just joking. That was really funny. No, the answer is whiskey. Yeah. Okay, next one. What two drinks are often mulled? Well, the answer to that is wine, of course, mulled wine and mulled cider. And I'm not 100% sure if I've ever had mulled cider. Yeah, I'm not a cider fan as it is, so I wouldn't really want mulled cider. In the UK, cider is always alcoholic. I believe in the US and other countries, it's not always an alcoholic drink. Yeah. Okay, next one. In Sweden, what do you commonly place in the bottom of your glass before adding glögg? The answer is not Rohypnol or a roofie. The answer is raisins and almonds. And I've actually had that before. Yeah. Didn't really add much to it, but I put them in there nonetheless. Just to be a part of something. In The Christmas Carol, what drink does Scrooge want to share with Bob Cratchit at the end of the book? Well, that is a bowl of smoking bishop, which is really just another name for mulled wine. But if you said mulled wine, you ain't having a point. No point for you. Next one. What American cocktail is most similar to Buck's Fizz? Well, if I said that Buck's Fizz is made of champagne and orange juice, you would say, oh, that's a mimosa. Yeah, there you go. Next one. What book published in 1937 popularised hot buttered rum? Well, I was racking my brain thinking, I know this one. Oh, 1937, oh, what could it be? And the answer is Northwest Passage. Yeah, never heard of it at all. I thought, to be honest, that hot buttered rum was popularised because they mention it in White Christmas, the film. But no, apparently it's from Northwest Passage. Never heard of it. Next one. Remember I told you all those Bailey's Irish Cream versions where you got apple pie, red velvet, cupcake, pumpkin spice or rum and raisin? Well, I thought they'd never made an apple pie version. Turns out they have. The one they haven't done is rum and raisin. Yeah. And the last question, which beer once had a Christmas advert that featured Santa's reindeers drinking it? Well, the slogan was Heineken refreshes the parts that other beers cannot reach. And it was Heineken. There you go, boys and girls. Well, I scored 7. And I'd say that's quite attainable. So I'm guessing a bunch of you alkies out there are going to beat me again. Well, whatever. But make sure you do send me a score. Because if you scored high, I don't even have to ask you to send it now. If you scored high, you send it. If you scored low, you don't bother. Shame on you. Shame on you for beating me, or shame on you for scoring low. Master quiz. Let's do this. Boys and girls, this episode's recommendation is fantastic. It's this show called The Tim Vine Chat Show, and it's available on BBC Sounds. I don't know if it's available anywhere else. It was originally a radio show on BBC Radio 4, and Tim Vine is a very funny comedian. Now, he does a lot of puns in his jokes, and they're very silly and they're very funny. I could do an example. I can't think of one off the top of my head, but he's very funny. He's frequently won the funniest joke of the season at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, which is a very famous comedy festival here in the UK. Now, the deal is, it's a chat show, but the people he chats to are just members of the audience. They're not celebrities, they're just regular people, and they tell stories of things that have happened to them, and he sings songs and he does loads of jokes, and it's just such a lovely show. Tim Vine's comedy is fun for all the family. It won't offend anyone. It's just nice, happy, funny stuff. Sadly, there's only 13 episodes and they're only half an hour long. So that's what, 6.5 hours. I listened to nearly all of them last weekend when I was driving around between jobs. And so I've got a few more to listen to this weekend. But it's just so lovely. I'm thinking I'll give it a year, have a listen again. Highly recommend it. I know you'll enjoy it. The Tim Vine Chat Show. And there's a couple of Christmas episodes on there as well. So there's that, because I know you love Christmas. Yeah, check it out. And that is it for this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. I want to say thanks to Kevin Church and Chris Kavanagh for sending in their stories. Also, thanks to everyone who sent in their quiz score. If you want to send in your quiz score this week, just make sure it's lower than mine and I'll be happy to receive it. I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. But in the meantime, you know I love you. Merry Happy Christmas.
Can it be It's a pretty thing, isn't it?